Evidence and Answers begins right now.
This is Evidence and Answers radio broadcast with our host, Pat Zukeran. Pat is an author, teacher, and international speaker in the area of Christian apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith. Dr. Holden and Dr. Zukeran joined to launch a series on Pat's book, The Apologetics of Jesus. In this episode, they define miracles, explain their importance, and how they uniquely authenticated Jesus as the promised Messiah and divine Son of God. The discussion also engages with challenges to miracles, including classic objections from Enlightenment thinker David Hume. If you've missed any part of this broadcast, log on at evidenceandanswers.org, and there you will find this discussion entitled How Jesus Used Miracles, which is Show 2 from Paratus, a podcast from Veritas International University. And you'll also find hundreds more podcasts that you may download or listen online. Now let's get right into the conclusion of this informative discussion.
Well, Joe, there are counterfeits. They're mimic miracles, if you will. But there's also real, real miracles. And Jesus performed these many miracles. What do the miracles Jesus performed tell us about his person and his authority?
Well, I think that's very straightforward. It demonstrates Jesus's power and authority over every aspect of the natural world and the supernatural world. I mean, first of all, it confirms God's message and its messenger. In fact, we see this in the New Testament in Hebrews chapter 2, where it says that at the first was begun to be spoken of, which is the salvation that the Lord came to offer, it was confirmed to us by those who heard him. In other words, it was confirmed through signs and wonders, because verse 4 of Hebrews chapter 2 says, God also bearing witness, both with signs and wonders, with various miracles and gifts of the Holy Spirit according to his own will. So miracles confirm that message of the gospel and also the messenger. In fact, miracles have had such a vast control over the natural world. If you look back in time to Aristotle's what he called categories of the world, or the cosmos, if you will, he said that basically there are different categories within the natural world, maybe a dozen or so, that ultimately govern the natural world and apply to our created world. But if you look to the scriptures, you find that Jesus did something that showed his superiority or his power over these natural categories that Aristotle had written about a long time ago. For example, Aristotle, one of the categories is substance. But in John chapter 2, you see that Jesus converted water into wine. He took water and made it a substance of the wine. Or quantity is another category, but we see that overcome by the 5 loaves and 2 fish when Jesus fed in the Gospels the 5,000. And then quality, it's the healing of the blind man. Now he has a different quality attributed to him, namely that of sight, where he didn't have it before. Or the quality of or category of relation, where you have Lazarus being raised from the dead, and now he's back on earth living amongst those who are living in the natural world. Or space. Do you know when Jesus said, your son is healed, to the nobleman, he didn't have to go and travel and lay hands on the sick son. He just spoke the word, and from a distance, he ultimately showed his power over space. Or over time, a man was healed from his crippled status and environment when he was 38 years being in that crippled position, ultimately in John chapter 5. And then over time as well, when Moses and Elijah appeared to Jesus in Matthew 17 on the Mount of Transfiguration, Moses and Elijah were of a different time period. They were of a different age altogether, but yet you see this miracle occur in Matthew chapter 17 on the Mount of Transfiguration as they discussed with Jesus his departure from the world. Your position, that's another category listed. Jesus showed the position of walking on water, a very unnatural position to have. He shows that it could be done. Peter did it, and also Jesus did it as well. And finally, you have this wonderful statement in Acts chapter 2, where Peter says that Jesus was confirmed to us by many infallible or convincing proofs. And he's referring to the miraculous appearances and people touched him and so forth. And it was for 40 days after his resurrection. So it tells us something very powerful about Jesus. These miracles show that Jesus's power is ultimate and his authority is ultimate, and that he has total control over all the categories of the natural world.
So good. I like how you said it's the confirmation of the message and the messenger. That's great. Yes. Thanks for that answer, Joe. Pat, go back to you. Joe kind of gave us what the miracles of Jesus tell us about his person authority, that there are confirmations of the message and messenger. But how are Christ's miracles unique? What set them apart from, let's say, what Satan mimicked or counterfeited, or what you said in your temple tour, other people there's counterfeits going on. What was unique about Jesus's miracles?
Yeah, you know, Satan is a creation, not the creator. So though he can do great and powerful counterfeit miracles, he cannot create or he cannot give life. And we see that, you know, in Exodus chapter 8, the plagues that came upon Egypt, the magicians of Pharaoh were able to mimic Moses' miracles to a limited extent. But in verse 19, when Moses turned the dust into gnats, he created life. At that point, the magicians had to look and say, you know what, we can't do this. And they ended up saying, this is the finger of God. So Satan cannot create or he cannot give life. And so that's where they're limited. And Christ's miracles, you see, you know, he claimed that authority. You know, he said, I am, in John 14, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he dies, shall live, even though he dies. And he demonstrated that by raising Lazarus. And not only Lazarus, but there are several resurrections there in the gospel, something Satan cannot do. Jesus was able to create, you know, feed 5,000 out of just 5 loaves and 2 fish. And so that's something Satan cannot do. And that's something unique about Christ's miracles. Also, as Joe stated, he demonstrated authority over every realm of creation. Jesus claimed to be the divine Son of God. And a lot of people make that claim. We got people running around claiming to be God incarnate or the divine Son of God. There's a guy in the Philippines where they're claiming to be the Son of God. Well, anybody can make that claim. Question is, can you demonstrate the authority? And Christ did, demonstrating the authority over every realm of creation. And a lot of people ask, you know, how do we know these actually happened? Well, as historians, we know it takes 80 to 100 years for legends to develop because the eyewitnesses have to pass away from who can verify your accounts as true or false, have to pass away from the scene in order for these legends to start creeping in. And what we know from the Gospels, and we've done many shows on this, many articles on this, they're first generation eyewitness accounts, or, you know, they're written in the generation of the eyewitnesses. And so when Peter is preaching, like in Acts chapter 2 in Jerusalem, when he says, men of Israel, hear these words, Jesus of Nazareth, a man attested to you by God with mighty works and wonders and signs that God did through him in your midst. All right, he's pointing, saying, you folks were eyewitnesses of this. Well, if Jesus never did these miracles, the crowd would be going, hey, what are you talking about? He didn't do those things. We saw Jesus. He didn't do any miracles. You know, their preaching and teaching and the Gospels could have never survived. There's too many eyewitnesses who can verify your accounts as true or false. So another unique thing is that they are historical. And you look in the other world religions, though the founders of those religions did not do miracles. In the earliest writings of the Buddha, most Buddhist scholars will tell you, yes, he did not do any supernatural miracles. Muhammad in the Quran did not do any supernatural miracles. Abdullah Yusuf Ali, you know, the great translator of the Quran into English, states in his introduction that Muhammad didn't do any miracles. You know, Confucius didn't do miracles of the caliber of Jesus. In fact, he didn't do any miracles. Lao Tzu of Taoism didn't do any miracles. And so the miracles of Christ are truly unique over every dimension, even creating and giving of life. They're truly unique. No other person in the history of the world does the miracles of Christ or demonstrates the authority over every realm of creation as Jesus did.
Such a great answer. Thanks for that, Pat. Well, Joe, this my question to you here is, I don't want this to kind of turn into a greatest hits type thing, but what would you consider the greatest miracle in the Bible? I mean, we know the Bible is full of miracles from Genesis to Revelation. Are there any standout miracles that really define the characteristics of either Christ or God's, you know, plan and purpose in the universe? What are your thoughts?
Well, Brian, that's a greatest hits question for sure. And it's in some ways tied into the last question about how Christ's miracles were unique. And when we come to this question, the most unique and the greatest of all miracles, I think that most of us would have to agree upon, would be the resurrection of Christ. That had to be the greatest sign that mankind has ever seen in the world. And this is something that was well documented. Paul in 1 Corinthians 15 said there were over 500 eyewitnesses. That all the disciples saw him. Jesus offered himself to be touched and handled. In fact, in Luke 24, it says that Jesus asked for a piece of fish that he could prove to those looking on to him who thought that he was maybe a ghost or a spirit. He says, I have a body, a physical body. Handle me and see, for a spirit doesn't have flesh and bones as you see I have. And then when we give this status of resurrection to the greatest of all miracles, I think about how Jesus himself pointed to the resurrection at multiple occasions. In fact, in John chapter 2, when he cleansed the temple, the Jewish authorities were very irate at Jesus after he did it. And he was being challenged and asked for a sign. And what Jesus responded was, destroy this temple and in 3 days I will raise it up. Now, the Jewish authorities failed to understand what Jesus was saying in that response, but John, the author of the gospel, he makes it clear that he was not speaking of the physical temple, but he was speaking of the temple of his body. See, the Jewish leaders were on another level completely, thinking of the physical temple's destruction and rebuilding, since it already took 46 years by that point to remodel the temple under Herod the Great. So Jesus was pointing to the resurrection of his body as the ultimate sign. And then again in Matthew chapter 12, he was challenged again by those same Jewish authorities. And he basically tells them, you're an evil and adulterous generation. And those are the kind of people who seek after a sign, and no sign will be given to you except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For just as Jonah was in the belly of the great fish 3 days and three nights, so also the Son of Man will be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. He points again to that resurrection sign as the ultimate sign. And as I mentioned before, Romans chapter 1 tells us that Jesus was demonstrated to be the Son of God through the resurrection of the dead. And 1 Corinthians 15, Paul makes very clear that we're still trapped in our sins. We're men most to be pitied. Our message is false. We're false witnesses. And we are so pitiable as people if Christ has not risen from the dead. So Christianity hinges on the truthfulness of Christ himself. And just before I sign off here on this question, that the uniqueness of this message of the resurrection, you can't find this in any other religion, as Pat mentioned earlier. You can't find this in Islam or Buddhism or Hinduism or the mystery cults of the ancient world or the Greco-Roman gods. This is a unique miracle that only Christians can tout as an evidence for the truthfulness of the Christian worldview. It's that wonderful miracle. And if we elevate satanic supernormal actions, not supernatural, but supernormal actions, supernormal works within the natural world to accomplish some end, but only God can work through the supernatural to bring about a certain, what we call a miracle. If we elevate those satanic supernormal signs to the same status of the great resurrection or the miracles we read about in the Bible, then what we're doing is diluting the effectiveness of the validation and the confirmation of biblical miracles. We're essentially putting them on the same par with satanic signs. And that we cannot do because it removes the entire apologetic defense of the truthfulness of Christianity if we allow Satan's workings to be on the same par as Christ's workings. So we know, as Pat said, these are lying signs and wonders. They're counterfeit, what we call miracles or signs. It works only the supernormal at best, since he is a creature. It has nowhere close to be the supernatural that transcends the natural order.
Yeah, and I like how you connect this back to the dimensions. The resurrection really was an unusual character. It had a historical context, had theological ramifications, moral, doctrinal, and teleological. And yeah, it really is the fulcrum, you know, for the Christian faith. Obviously, another, if we were to say greatest hits, would be creation itself. The fact that God created the world from nothing, that precipitates all other miraculous events. But this, the resurrection really is the miracle of all miracles because it has so many dimensions to it. The ramifications are immense. So, well, Pat, I'm going to now kind of take a different view here. We've kind of unpacked what a miracle is. We've looked at the unique dimensions that miracles have. We talked about how Christ's miracles were unique and unlike any others. But there is a whole group of people in the world that do not believe miracles exist. And I know we don't have a whole bunch of time, maybe about 5 minutes to unpack this, but I thought we could deal with one person who really a lot of thinkers, intellectuals, they'll always go back to a Scottish philosopher by the name of David Hume. And David Hume sets out his case against miracles. And for our listeners, David Hume lived during the Age of Enlightenment. Kind of think of the time that the United States was forming as a country, that 1700s. But he was very influential, and you will still hear people using Hume's arguments against the miraculous. So, Pat, my question to you is, what is Hume's proposition state? What is it exactly he's proposing?
Yeah, Brian, you bring up a great point. And Hume wrote in his book that his argument against miracles, he'll say, for ages to come, you know, we'll have answered the challenge that miracles are not possible. And, you know, as you said, in every debate that I've been in and every debate I've listened to of the great apologists who are out there today, the arguments against miracles still David Hume's arguments in some form or another. And so basically, you know, the two most popular are this. He says, a miracle is by definition a rare occurrence. Natural law is by definition a description of regular occurrence. So point three, the evidence for the regular is always greater for the rare. So a wise individual will always base his belief on the greater evidence. Therefore, a wise individual should never believe in miracles. So for example, Hume might argue, look, billions of people have lived and billions of people have died. And you're to tell me in this one instance, this guy prophesied and rose, you know, and accomplished his own resurrection from the dead. Well, billions have come, billions have died, no one's ever risen from the dead. So this one time you're telling me to believe in this? Well, a wise person will look and say, look, billions have come, billions have gone. A wise person would believe in the greater amount of evidence that people don't rise from the grave. Okay, so that'd be argument number one. And the second one is that all the religions claim miracles to support their claims. The religions contradict each other in their teachings. Therefore, no miracle can be used to support any religious system. So that's basically the two arguments from David Hume, perhaps the most brilliant arguments against miracles ever devised by the human mind.
So good. Thanks for that. Well, Joe, you know, springboarding off of Pat's answer, what actually was the heartbeat, the essence of Hume's argument against the miraculous?
Well, he has a preoccupation with his view of the natural world. He saw the laws of nature that govern the natural world as fixed, without variation. You can't alter them. And if that is true, then miracles can occur because miracles are an exception to those laws of nature. So you can see how Hume would arrive at his position. So what the Christian has to do is actually take exception to his view that the laws of nature are fixed. And what we say to that is that these laws that govern our world on a regular basis are actually descriptive. They describe how the universe usually operates, and they're not prescriptive. They don't prescribe or mandate how the universe must operate at all times. And if that's the case, that these laws are only descriptions of what we see when we look through the telescope, the microscope, or we analyze these different laws, then there can be exceptions to these laws of nature. Even scientists today manipulate these laws to achieve some intended effect or whatever they might be researching. But also, you know, when he says that the evidence for the regular natural events that we experience daily is greater than the evidence of singular miraculous events, it fails to understand that we are to weigh the evidence. We're not to simply add the evidence. You see, when a court of law convenes, they want to weigh the witnesses' testimonies and the exhibits that are submitted. It doesn't matter how many times people experience the natural world during their lifetime. We have to weigh the evidence of a miraculous report. And when we weigh the evidence of a miraculous report instead of add them, we see that we have credible eyewitnesses. We see that it has been written down and documented by those who saw these events and who consulted those who experienced these events. In a more practical way, you could say that one person that witnessed a crime is much more relevant and can be weighed than 10 people that had no experience of that crime. See, under Hume's understanding, you'd have to agree with the 10 who did witness instead of the one who actually did. You have to weigh the evidence. But he was a mathematician, and so he appeals to adding the numbers of times we experience things rather than weighing even one valid report of the miracle itself. And so he has one other argument, too. He actually says that the reports of the miraculous coming from all the religions of the world cancel each other out. And that can't possibly be the case from the scriptural standpoint, from a Christian standpoint, because, again, all claims to a miracle are not equally supported. We have claims, again, from eyewitnesses, whereas you look in the Quran or the Bhagavad Gita or the Vedas or any other religious scriptures that they have out there, we have the most well-attested, well-supported, the best dating, the best quantity of manuscripts of the ancient world. The accuracy of transmission is unparalleled and cannot be rivaled by any other work from the ancient world. We have great support to confirm our claims of miraculous events. So yes, there are problems with Hume's arguments, and Christians have good answers to solve those issues as well.
Yeah, so the bottom line is that Hume's arguments are not airtight. There's major problems, and we would encourage our listeners to really dig into that, because as Pat pointed out, many people use these same arguments today, and so getting a handle on Hume's arguments and how to respond would be very helpful. Well, gentlemen, we are out of time, but with all our episodes, we encourage our listeners to dig deeper into this topic. So, Pat, what books would you recommend about miracles and how to respond and support them?
Yes, there's a great book by Dr. Geisler on miracles. I think there's another one by Dr. Gary Habermas, and I think it's Doug Guyvet on miracles. Also, there's a great chapter in the Apologetics of Jesus and in Joe Holden's book, The Harvest Handbook of Apologetics. Some great chapters there on Hume's arguments and the case for miracles.
Thanks for that. Joe, how about you? Any books you would recommend?
Boy, I really like the ones that Patrick did just recommended. But C.S. Lewis has a book called Miracles. You can look at that as well. And I believe the one that Patrick was referring to might be called Miracles in the Modern Mind by Norman Geisler.
Well, there you have it. Well, we thank you for joining us, Joe and Pat. Looking forward to next week as we hone in on Jesus' use of the resurrection. Until then, may the Lord richly bless you.
Come to a close.
Be sure to join us again here on Evidence and Answers. Our goal is to bring you the love of Christ and to equip you in your faith to always be ready to give a response. If you would like to hold an apologetics conference or series of teachings at your facility, contact Pat by calling him in Hawaii. That number there is 483-0586. Or email him through the Evidence and Answers website. That's evidenceandanswers.org. Be sure to browse through our listing of topics on our site. We have everything from atheism to Zen Buddhism. You will also find articles and additional audio for you to listen to or download. An additional location to find Pat's messages is on YouTube. Look up Evidence and Answers and hit that subscribe button. To keep quality broadcasts like Pat's on the air, we rely on generous financial support from you, our listeners. Donating is simple. Once again, log on at evidenceandanswers.org. Evidence and Answers is grateful for one of our sponsors, the Honolulu Christian Church. If you don't have a home church and are looking for a great place to grow in your faith, check out the Honolulu Christian Church. For service times, log in at honoluluchristian.org. Join us again next time on the air or online as we provide compelling reasons for faith in Christ. That's Evidence and Answers with Pat Zukeran. Yeah.